there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello, this is James, and welcome to episode 9 of Let's Talk Withdrawal, a new weekly podcast discussing antidepressants. This week we have an interview with Christopher. Christopher describes his difficult childhood, which led him to be treated for many years with various psychiatric medications. After successfully withdrawing, he now works as a program manager for Heart and Soul Inc. in California, an organization which offers a variety of mental health, recovery-oriented, and wellness support opportunities for people in need of mental health support. Christopher, thank you so much for talking to us today. Can I start by asking you to introduce yourself and tell us a little about your background?
So my name's Christopher Jump. I'm the program manager at Heart and Soul. We're a peer-run self-help nonprofit agency in San Mateo County, California. And I first began taking antidepressants in the spring of 1994. I had been hospitalized with major depressive disorder and told that I was mentally ill due to a chemical imbalance in the brain. I did not believe that for even a moment, but I wanted to be released from the hospital, and part of the agreement for me to be discharged was take this drug. But I dealt with extreme sadness for as long as I could remember. Even as far back as kindergarten, I felt really sad and really hopeless about life. I didn't think I'd live to see adulthood. In third grade, I would openly talk about wanting to kill myself and how I would do the deed. But I thought that was normal. I thought all children felt like I did. In my family growing up, there was a lot of yelling and a lot of hitting. My mom would very often tell me that she hated me and that she wished she had killed me. She'd always tell me how worthless and stupid I was. And everything I was interested in as a child was stupid. You know, like most children in the 70s, I was really interested in Star Wars and dinosaurs and cowboys and Indians. I used to write these stories and these screenplays, but all these things were stupid. Everything I was interested in, according to my mom, was stupid. But I thought this was normal as well. I thought the parental figure telling their child, yeah, everything you like is dumb, and hitting your child and screaming at your child and telling your child that you hate them and that you want to kill them, I thought that was normal behaviors. As I grew older, I just became less and less interested in activities. High school, I was very isolated. I never did what teenagers usually do, go out with their friends, going out surfing or going to the parties on the beach. I didn't do any of that. I just thought, well, I'm that stupid kid that everyone hates. After I graduated from high school in 1989, my depression and suicide ideation continued to worsen until I was finally hospitalized in the spring of 1994. So there was a lot of pressure on me at that time from the past and the present, and it got overwhelming. It just got to the point where I can't handle this and death is preferable to life. And so finally, some friends talked to me and they encouraged me to seek treatment, to seek some help. And so I willingly went into the hospital, was misdiagnosed with a mental illness, and that opened the door for the next 15 years of unnecessary and ineffective medications.
Well, Christopher, the experiences that you describe sound intolerable, and it's completely understandable that you went into hospital to get the help and support you thought you needed. How did you feel about being prescribed antidepressant drugs?
I was very against it. I didn't buy into the whole it's biochemical and it's your brain chemistry. For one, as a person with type 1 diabetes, when I go to see my doctor, they ask me some questions, but then they do lab work to make sure everything's functioning properly. Whereas when I saw this psychiatrist, he talked to me for about 10 minutes, didn't ask me anything about my life, didn't do any type of physical exam, and then told me my brain chemistry was out of balance. And I'm saying, well, how do you know? You haven't examined me. But I felt angry. I felt frustrated. I felt hopeless. I kept thinking, well, wait, why do I need to take these pills? And I suspected they weren't going to do me any good. But as I said before, well, I want to get discharged from the hospital, and this is the only way to do it. They're not going to let me out if I don't agree to take these drugs.
Can I ask, when you were taking the medications, did you struggle with side effects? And what side effects caused you the most difficulty?
Well, James, there was a plethora of side effects. Before going on drugs, even though I felt miserable, I had some semblance of a normal life, whereas once I went on them, and I changed drugs many times in my life over those 15 years. And the main thing that happened was all I did was gain weight, feel more miserable emotionally than ever, self-harm, think about suicide, try to kill myself, and get hospitalized. When I went on my very first one, I started to become very agitated. I just couldn't relax. I would be so amped up and so agitated that I couldn't sleep at night. I began to experience racing thoughts. I could not focus on anything. My thoughts would just jump from thought to thought to thought to thought. I became very aggressive. I've never put my hands on anyone unless it was in self-defense. But I literally would be up in the face of people twice my size and ready to throw down with them. So while I was under the influence of the different psychotropic drugs, I became even more depressed and hopeless. I felt so miserable emotionally and physically that I could not function. I stopped going to work. I stopped socializing. As I said before, I've always been moody, but my temper was out of control. My self-harming and suicide ideation increased. I began to cut with more frequency. I used to cut a couple of times a year. Once I went on medication, I was self-harming almost monthly. But it was just a way for me to relieve my angst. And it was a way of getting attention. Oh, come feel sorry for Christopher. He's hurting himself again. Yeah. I would cut and or overdose on my insulin regularly. And my suicide ideation increased to the point where it was constant. Killing myself was all I could think about. And I even attempted a few times.
That experience and the increase in intensity of symptoms must have been so difficult to deal with. During that time, were you getting medical support? Were you talking to your doctors or psychiatrists about what was happening? And if so, what was their response?
Usually it was, that's your depression. And my response would be, well, no, it's not. I wasn't acting like this before. I've been depressed my entire life, and I didn't act this way until I got put on this medication. And the response would be, well, you just don't know how sick you are. But I wasn't sick before. Well, you need these drugs to function. I was functioning before. I'm not functioning now. But no one would listen.
Christopher, I wondered if you experienced the same as me. When I went to my doctors to say I was struggling, the first thing that they wanted to do was increase my dosage or to add another antidepressant on top. Was that something you experienced?
Yes, I did. They had me on 3 different antidepressants at the maximum dosage and an antipsychotic at one point. I've never experienced what's called psychosis. I call it a spiritual awakening myself, but I had never experienced that at any point in time in my life. Why am I on an antipsychotic? They had me on a mood stabilizer at one point, in addition to all the antidepressants. And there were other mood stabilizers they tried to put me on. But when I do some research on them, I was like, there is no way I am taking this.
And I think I'm right in saying that you've stopped the antidepressants now. Is that correct?
Yes, I have been off for 8 years.
Well done. That's a considerable achievement after being on them for the length of time that you were. What was it that made you decide to stop taking them? And what did you find helpful as you were starting to withdraw?
So, James, when I finally decided to start tapering off them, I had been through a couple of therapies. And I was starting to feel differently, think differently, and act differently. So the first therapy I went through was called dialectic behavior therapy. So DBT was created by Dr. Marsha Linehan back in the 1980s for the treatment of people that have a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder. DBT utilizes aspects of CBT, reality testing, distress tolerance, acceptance, and mindful awareness. These are largely derived from Buddhist meditative practices. DBT taught me to be present, to be in the moment, to examine what is going on in my life, take a non-judgmental stance in regards to life circumstances, and find more ways of coping so I don't have to cut or do other things to get attention.
How long do you estimate it took you to withdraw from your medications?
It took about a year for me to go completely off of the medication. So the two therapies, dialectic behavior therapy and cognitive behavior therapy, were really beneficial for me in regards to that. Through those couple of therapies, I was able to start thinking different, feeling different, and behaving different. So then I started to become interested in life again. I started to think about going back to school. I started to think about going back to work. I started to think about socializing. So I approached my psychiatrist a couple of times and I said to her, hey, I'm feeling better. I'm thinking different. I want to participate in my life again. What do you think of me reducing my medication? And her response was, well, we can increase. Well, why would I want to? I feel better. Well, we can add something.
It's so disappointing, isn't it? Because you get a clear sense that the doctors would be quite happy for you to stay on the drugs for life, even though we know very little about the long-term effects on our health.
Right. It's never been proven that long-term usage is beneficial. I do believe short-term usage can be beneficial, but you start to see a lot of major psychological and physical damage with long-term usage.
It's to your credit that you stopped your medications, especially with so little support. So once you'd got off and stabilized, how did you feel?
Well, I felt a sense of accomplishment. I'd been on medication for so long, and I was fearful because I had no support. I didn't tell anyone what I was doing. After approaching my doctor a few times, she repeatedly telling me we can increase or add. I finally decided, okay, it took years to build up to the dosage I'm on. What happens if I taper off? Yeah. Because I tried to stop cold turkey on average 2 to 3 times a year. Okay. And I'd always have this major crash and wind up right back in the hospital. So I figured, okay, cold turkey doesn't work. What happens if I taper off? And I was able to do that. I was able to slowly start reducing. But it was fearful at first because no supports. The psychiatrist isn't going to help me with that. I didn't know about any support groups for going off of medication. All my friends are like, oh, no, you need this to survive. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm not surviving now, so.
And having made the break with the medication, which was a big step for you, looking back, how do you feel about the process that you went through?
And so there were times when I was tapering off, and even after I went off, and even now, where sometimes the way the world gets heavy, and I think, did I make the right decision? And then I'm able to remind myself, you know what? I've been off these medications for a while, and I've been okay. I'll be okay again. And telling myself, look how far I've come in the last 8 years. And what would my life be like if I went back on these medications? I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I wouldn't be working full-time as the program manager at Heart and Soul. I wouldn't be on this podcast. I wouldn't be doing the work I do. I wouldn't be out in the community. I wouldn't have my own apartment. I wouldn't have gone back to school and got my peer counseling certificate. So it's just reminding myself of those things.
Well, it's clear from the way you describe it what a big step it was in taking back control of your life. Christopher, I just wanted to ask if you could tell us a little bit about Heart and Soul Inc. and your role there.
So Heart and Soul originated in 2005. We're an entirely peer-run organization. Every single person that works there has a diagnosis of some type or identifies as a person with lived experience. 6 of our 8 board members are all people with lived experience. We have 5 centers throughout San Mateo County. We provide social, recreational, and health and wellness activities for other individuals that have lived experience. We provide what are known as life skills group. We have drop-in one-on-one peer support. We do total wellness, which is all about treating the entire person, not just the mental health, but their physical as well.
This idea of peer support is fascinating. It must be incredibly rewarding to support someone who you must look at and think, I was where you are 15 or 20 years ago. That must be so powerful.
It is. It's absolutely amazing to me to be able to be able to say those very words to someone that, hey, I was where you are. I've seen people come into our centers in distress in the state I was in, where there's no hope, not even a glimmer of light, and walk out at the end of the day going, okay, I may still feel miserable, but I have something to look forward to tomorrow. I have a place to come back where I can just have a space and be myself. We do a lot of meeting people where they are. So if someone comes in distress, we create that space for them to do their own work. If they want some guidance or some input from us, we can give them that. But we really try to create that space for someone to process, okay, this is what's going on.
Well, Christopher, I salute you for turning your difficult and traumatic experiences into a force for the good of others.
I appreciate that. That's really what I needed when I was in so much distress. Yes, I needed to learn some skills, but I really needed that space where I could just get a grasp on, okay, this is what's happening. That would have helped me immensely if I just had a space where I could go for a couple of days and get a grip on, okay, this is what's happening. This is what's in front of me. Now, what can I do about it? What are my options?
You're clearly making a big difference to those people who look to you and Heart and Soul for support, and that must also be a motivation for you.
Right, James. That's what keeps me going, is I found something that motivates me You know, sometimes I wake up in the morning, weight a little is heavy today. I don't want to get out of bed. Well, I'm upper management of my job. So I have 8 staff members that are relying on me. I have a few hundred of our participants that are relying on me. I need to be at my desk at 8:30 Monday through Friday. Otherwise, I'm letting a whole group of people down.
Well, I can honestly say that the people I've learned most from are those who have been in the darkest places and come out the other side stronger for it and able to support others. Is that part of the focus of Heart and Soul, Inc.?
Oh, it is. It's so rewarding. Before starting at Heart and Soul, I would speak on a panel of people with lived experience, and that really opened the door for me to want to do peer support work. I actually used to be very anti-peer support. I used to always think, well, what can other people with lived experience say to me? And then as I started to be around my peers more and heard about their experiences, I realized, wow, peers can say a lot to each other. I learned so much more from my peers than I did from my therapist. And my therapists were great, don't get me wrong, but I learned so much more interacting with people, others that have lived experience.
Well, certainly the range of support and solutions that you provide is something the medical community just can't easily achieve. What you describe is about giving people the tools to help themselves out of difficulty.
Right. Our focus for this year is really to change the conversation from diagnosis to dialogue. Instead of what's the matter with you, what has happened to you? Let's sit down and talk about it. Let's talk about options. Let's talk about what has happened in your life.
And Christopher, just to close, I wanted to ask, if you had a friend who was thinking of taking an antidepressant on medical advice, what advice would you give them?
Always do your own research first. Psychiatry, NAMI, the pharmaceuticals, and society may tell you a few of the harmful effects of the drugs, such as type 2 diabetes, weight gain, dry mouth, etc., but they do not give the full scoop. They conveniently leave out effects such as Parkinsonism, compulsive restlessness, severe anxiety, and other conditions. You know, oftentimes, a person will experience increased symptoms and told that it's their depression that is causing it, or that it's unlocking their underlying bipolar, schizophrenia, whatever. And then they're given more drugs. So I would recommend that anyone considering taking antidepressants talk to others who have been on them and gone off. Find out what their experience was like. Subscribe to the blog Mad in America. There's a lot of testimonies there about what the experience was like. Read books such as Dr. Peter Bragan's book, Medication Madness, Robert Whitaker's book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, Dr. Terry Lynch's book, Depression Delusion, and A Dose of Sanity by Dr. Sidney Walker. Get a complete physical. Make sure there's not some underlying physical cause. Traumatic brain injury, an overactive thyroid, high blood sugar, or low blood sugar can all disguise themselves as depression. You know, remember that even if you get a complete physical exam, even if nothing is revealed, that doesn't mean it's your brain chemistry. Are there stressors going on in your life? Are you exercising? How are you sleeping? Has there been any new trauma? How are your eating habits? Processed foods can lead to depression. So really gathering all the facts and then sitting down and making an informed decision. You know, psychiatry and the others are only going to tell you so much. It's really up to us to sit down and look at the big overall picture.
Thank you. That's excellent advice. And thank you so much for talking with me for this podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. I thank you for selecting me as one of the people to be a part of it.
Well, I'm sure you'll agree that Christopher's transformation from his difficult childhood experiences and diagnosis of mental illness and resulting medication to spending his time actively supporting others with their mental health and well-being is truly inspirational. Feedback. Thank you so much for getting in touch and for giving me your feedback. It's great to know that you're finding this podcast interesting and informative. I wanted to share this with you that was emailed to me. Thank you for giving me the courage to try again on stopping venlafaxine. I now realize how slowly it needs to be done. I'm really pleased that the podcast is communicating that withdrawal is possible, but that you need to do your research and take your time. People differ markedly in their response to antidepressant treatment, so it makes sense that we all differ in withdrawal too. I'd also like to mention a couple of support resources that I make use of in case they are helpful for you. Firstly, comingoff.com. This website gives up-to-date information about psychiatric medication, how it functions, and the withdrawal process. It was put together by people who have been prescribed medication and withdrawn from it, and clinicians who have been involved in supporting this process. Another incredible reference tool is AntiDepAware. The objective of this website is to promote awareness of the dangers of antidepressants. It began in 2013 and includes links to reports of inquests held in England and Wales since 2003. There are more than 4,800 reports on self-inflicted deaths, all of which are related to the use of antidepressants. To visit the site, go to www.antidepaware.co.uk. Finally, if you're struggling with withdrawal yourself and don't know where to turn, there are more resources listed on my website, jfmoore.co.uk. Please go and have a look.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.